Hi, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Digiday podcast. I'm Kamika McCoy, senior marketing reporter here at Digiday.
And I'm Kaylee Barber, media editor at Digiday.
Kaylee, happy Friday. How's your week been?
We're coming up on our Digiday Publishing Summit at the end of this month, and I will be attending in Vail. And it feels like it's just been a mad dash to that finish line. Really just kind of trying to get my life in order before going out to Colorado. So it's been a busy week, but yeah. How about you? How are you feeling?
I've been in the same boat, but I feel like every time we do this podcast, I'm like, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to talk about for like our intro? This time there has been no shortage of things happening this week between the TikTok ban, which has TikTok in shambles. I've seen several flyers for a TikTok funeral. Somebody called it TikTokiana. And did a few, very unserious people. The government is threatening to ban TikTok. And they hosted a flyer with TikTok on wings on the back. Unserious people. On the other hand, you've got Kate Middleton's Photoshop project. That's got us all in shambles as well. I hope that lady is okay.
Yeah. So I never once bought the fact that the conspiracy, because it's very much a conspiracy theory. It is not a serious theory. But I never once bought the fact that she is missing or I'll say unalived for the TikTok folk to tie those two threads together. But it's weird. And I do have some concerns now about her whereabouts. Is this all just to further the plot of The Crown, to give them something to work off of? Not entirely sure. But it is a fascinating thing to follow on social media.
And it is.
With TikTok, as I've said 100,000 times on this podcast, I have not been active on that platform in over a year, which is good and bad because I feel like I am missing out on the hysteria probably happening on that platform. But I don't know. It might be for the best of our online generation to have a little bit of a break from that platform. And that's all I'll say on that matter. How are you feeling about potential TikTok bans?
I mean, for my mental health, probably not a bad idea. I've got dry eyes right now from all the scrolling that I do. But for the sake of like society, I think this is a reach. I mean, but not for nothing. I will say that it's got a long ways to go. We've got the Senate and the backlash that and politics involved and the backlash that Gen Z will, you know, wreak on this, I think it cannot be understated.
So it is an election year after all.
Exactly.
One candidate to be in support of TikTok and you have the entire younger vote.
Listen, exactly. Okay, this is going to be an awful transition, but we're going to do it anyways. This week, you talked to Jeff Schiller, who is CRO of Vox Media. You know, on the heels of South by Southwest, everybody's still kind of dragging themselves out of that now, returning from it and whatnot. So, talk to me about what you guys had a conversation about.
Yeah, so we connected literally. I think he had just gotten off the plane like the day before from Austin. And I think if there is a TikTok ban, one medium that has the potential to really benefit from that is possibly podcasts, maybe filling some of the gap of time spent scrolling. Maybe not. That could just be a, you know, big hypothesis on my end. But we did talk about how Vox Media was using South by Southwest as a kind of like spotlight on their podcast network, which we talked a decent amount about because the podcast space has kind of been forming this bubble. My colleague Sarah Guaglione has been doing some great coverage on the media beat about like the podcast ad industry and how that market has been going through its own trials and tribulations the past, you know, couple of years, like the rest of the ad market. But we talked a bit about how he was positioning Vox Media's properties and podcasts to advertisers while you know, on stage and at South by Southwest. And largely, I think the media industry has been using these kind of industry events as a way to really home in on what their sales pitch is this year. And so we talked a lot about just the approach to ad revenue in 2024, how it's looking in comparison to 2023, especially for a digital media company. And yeah, it's an interesting conversation. I do think we kind of go through a lot of different things, but we do start off looking at, you know, South by Southwest and podcasts to see, you know, how that is, how that's going for Vox and Jeff, who's, you know, less than a year at this company. But yeah, he's been busy at work trying to get, you know, ad revenue back into gear, essentially. So a lot was covered in this conversation.
Love that. Sounds like a very juicy scoop, and I will let you guys get to it.
Jeff, welcome back to the DigiDay podcast. How are you?
I am fantastic, Kaylee. I am fresh off the plane from Austin. Got in last night. We had an amazing weekend with the Vox Media podcast stage. So, ready to roll.
Yeah, that's awesome. So my colleague, Sarah Guaglione, I think spoke with Vox for a story she did on kind of this. The story was called, like, Why Media Companies Are Pushing Podcasts at South By Trojan Horse Style, which I thought was an interesting kind of phrasing for how podcasts are really, I think, having a bit of a, not a renaissance, but definitely like kind of showing up a little bit more intentionally at South By Southwest. And definitely wanted to talk to you about how you showed up there and then also your intentions for really pushing audio in that venue. So yeah, maybe like starting out with a little bit of background on what your like podcast kind of showcase looked like and how it went. Cause since you just got back, I'm sure it's fresh on the mind, but yeah, that'd be a great starting spot.
So we powered the podcast stage for South by Southwest. And one of the things that really sets us apart is our focus on our brands and our talent. And nothing was more of a showcase for that than the podcast stage. So we had nearly 4,000 guests on the podcast stage, and our talent, including Kara Swisher, Scott Galloway, Esther Perel, Brené Brown, Andre Iguodala, and Evan Turner all did live podcasts. And part of the magic of South By was the special guests that were able to partake in the show. So we had Trevor Noah, Mark Cuban, Megan Rapinoe, all guest appearances on our podcast. And so from that lens, the experience for the attendees was amazing. They got to see the podcast that they love. They got to see the host that they love live. They got to participate. We had Q&As. We had lines out the door. So all in, it was an amazing success.
Got it. And the event itself had a sponsor or like a couple of sponsors. So like I think it's been well reported that events is a pretty big focus for publishers this year in terms of like generating sponsorship revenue. There's been a lot of advertiser interest in, you know, live in-person events. But I guess I'm curious, I have a couple questions around advertisers, but regarding this event, did you have kind of like a sponsorship piece of it where you were generating revenue while also, you know, putting on a good kind of showcase of your audio offerings, or how are you thinking about it from like a business perspective?
Yeah, so our stage was sponsored by Atlassian. And in addition to hosting the podcast stage as the lead sponsor, we also had a live taping of the Prof G pod at their Austin headquarters. So that was one. We also had special events and activations around How I Get It Done, which manifested in a panel that was hosted by Lindsay Peoples. We had athletes, including Olympic gold medal snowboarder Chloe Kim, and that was part of a larger partnership with Team Milk, which also includes a women's only inspirational run that we did in Austin to kick off South by Southwest, as well as an upcoming docu-series. The last one, which again, I think speaks to the breadth and depth of Vox Media, is we had an outdoor workout class from Pop Sugar and their ClassFit Sugar brand presented by Allegra, as well as a happy hour with Eater and San Diego Tourism, a branded bar with Smirnoff and Thrillist, and actually a lot more, but that's a great little roundup.
Got it. So not all of your activations at South By were specifically like podcast or audio focused. You had some other kind of showcases for the digital media brands?
Absolutely. Vox Media is all in on talent and IP, and that's a great manifestation. Our ability to have the pod hosts do their live tapings, our ability to have the brands manifest live in the examples that I mentioned.
Okay, so you had a big kind of presence at South By this year. Is it bigger than past years? Like, would you say you've gone bigger with this event than you have historically? Or is it about on par with how Vox Media has showed up to South By in the, past few years, or maybe like pre-COVID, if you're really kind of, the past few years were a little funky.
Vox Media has had a steady presence at South by Southwest for a number of years. I will say this is our biggest year ever. And 3 days of live tapings with special guests, the brand activations, all are a testament to our continued focus on South by Southwest and investing in that particular festival.
Is part of the reason for going bigger this year because you had more advertiser or like sponsor interest in showing up with the Vox Media brands this year? Or was there like other kind of goals from either, like I know these industry events typically are really good like grounds for generating ad sales for like the rest of the year, like having face-to-face conversations with advertisers. Like, was there a larger goal around like your selling strategy too and getting that face-to-face time? Or I guess like what's the genesis of going bigger this year?
Going bigger is driven by the audiences that our talent and RIP are attracting. We're not seeing it just at South By. We're seeing it in the engagement of the audiences when we have the pods or by the time spent on the .com. So it's really catering to the audience. On the sponsor side, that's more of a market demand. They see our audiences are growing, our audiences are engaged, our audiences are premium, and they want to be a part of that. So I would say, first and foremost, it's consumers saying, we want more.
In terms of like event revenue for the year and South By being, you know, Q4, you had a decent amount of like activations around your presence there with your various brands. Like, how has it been in terms of like generating event sponsorship revenue and kind of kicking off 2024? Again, given the fact that I've heard from so many publishers that events is just a really core part of their strategy for growth this year. And it was last year too, but I think this year was just a very big kind of level of excitement around events as a revenue stream.
Events have always been a core part of our brand. It's how we can reach consumers in real life. From that perspective, last year, ending the year with Vulture Fest was incredibly successful. That drove demand. As we do our big tentpole events, whether it's Vulture Fest or Vulture Spot at Sundance or South by Southwest or Code, whatever it might be, they're showcases. So there is a positive ripple effect of brands saying, I want to be part of this either again, or I want to be part of something with you. So I would say events and experiential are core. Demand grows, but it's not a blanket demand for all sort of experiential as a total. I think for us, it's emblematic of the power of our brands, particularly and how resonant they are with consumers, that is driving our demand.
Right. And like, I guess using events as a way to fill the, you know, advertiser funnel. And this was a question I had around audio too, kind of getting back to that story my colleague Sarah wrote. It seemed like there was this kind of ambition to bring in new advertisers to podcasting this year. And I think given the market for audio has been, like most of the ad market last year, a little bit under pressure and a little bit siphoning to a handful of brands versus, like, you know, a ton of the podcast market. Like, how did you think about presenting, you know, this showcase for your audio offerings as kind of a selling opportunity, and, you know, whether or not it was attracting new advertisers or just, again, trying to, like, maybe bring in old partners back into the mix? But, like, how are you thinking about that kind of selling generation and, like, you know, that, I guess, that, like, showcase piece of it?
So the great part about the Vox Media Podcast Network is that our brand partners are fans. So it makes it really easy for us to have a conversation when they want to be close to Scott Galloway or Kara Swisher or Brené Brown or Esther Perel. So for us, that is something we certainly don't take for granted, and we certainly look at as a privilege. I will say, beyond that, the demand holistically is something we believe in. So we have our core talent, which we view as a differentiator. We have scale as a top seven now podcast network, but the medium as a whole is growing as well. So we have those tailwinds.
Are you focusing then on kind of like advertisers who are, I guess, have been partners in the past with Vox Media, or, like you mentioned, like fans of the brand? Like, is it largely looking at trying to capture either returning advertisers or like improving like renewal rates in that way? Or is there a strategy this year to go out into the market and try to attract new advertisers, or even those who haven't worked in audio in the past? Because I feel like that's also a big initiative to get like fresh blood into the audio advertising space kind of in general.
Many, many of our brands are repeat customers. With the growth on the audience side, we are seeing an influx of new advertisers that want to partake. So I would say it's both. We look to maintain. We also look to grow. And this is a common thread. Results and ROI for us, it's incredibly important that we consistently and sustainably generate that for our partners. Pods and our ability to be an impactful partner, that's what drives retention. So I will say that is working incredibly well. Again, a common thread across all the things that we do on Vox Media, whether it's the .com, whether it's Forte, our data platform that allows for us to optimize based on high-performing audiences, high-performing segments. It all ties together through that lens of results.
When you're looking at, I guess, attracting new advertisers and you know, showing the value of an audio audience and how, you know, they fit in with maybe their digital media ambitions to a degree, are you looking at like new categories at all? Like, are you trying to expand outside of, you know, maybe the bread and butter type advertisers that I think, I guess, like historically, like DTC brands were really big in podcasting, but I feel like the past few years it's switched gears a bit. But I'm curious, like, are you trying to expand outside of like specific categories? And like, I guess, how are you thinking about categories and audio, and if there's an opportunity to expand like from that point of view as well?
Like children, I love all industry categories equally. So I am open for conversations as long as there is alignment. And what I mean by that is we want to treat our audience with care, because going back to what I said a couple of seconds ago about driving results, They are our most important asset alongside of our talent and our intellectual property. So from the lens of contextualization, if an ad category makes sense, then we want to start there. If there are those opportunistic moments that can create some level of kismet, we will certainly pursue them. But when we think about new categories, so you look at the pods that we have, and we have, I think, cornered the market from a business B2B lens. We also have most recently with Point Forward gone into the basketball sports culture sphere. That's building on MMA Hour, which has been a core part of the Vox Media podcast network, but it's branching into a different part of sports. We're also going to launch with Taylor Lorenz and Power User later this month, simultaneously on YouTube and audio. So we're getting into different sectors, and we've been very acquisitive in that space. But I think this is important, Vox Media's goal is to be the most influential in each of its vertical categories. So the B2B aspect, that's emblematic of how we think of ourselves in tech with The Verge, in food with Eater, in luxury with New York Magazine, and certainly all of the brands that are across the Vox Media portfolio.
Have you been surprised or like maybe excited about any specific category that's been like warming up to audio more than others, or like, you know, maybe a new subset of advertisers that are like interested in experimenting in this platform that hasn't been historically active in podcasting or audio in the past?
We're really pleased across the board. As a pop culture fan, I'm excited to see entertainment, the media and entertainment category, delve more deeply into audio. Anecdotally, I think that there was a belief that the assets, the video assets, need to speak for themselves, but we are running audio support for media and entertainment right now, and I hope that that continues to grow.
Yeah, and so I'm curious, like, obviously, South by Southwest is like a pretty important showcase moment, as we talked about, for you know, your podcasting, but also the brands kind of holistically within the portfolio. But I'm curious, like, how you are approaching like your selling strategy and your go-to-market strategy this quarter. I think, and I believe we talked about this at the end of last year, beginning of this year, for separate trend pieces, but there's a lot of optimism about 2024 kind of getting back into gear, kind of like revving up in the ad market a little bit more than how 2023 performed. But I'm curious, like, how moments like South by Southwest or other, you know, industry events or like factor into your selling strategy or how you're kind of positioning your team to really, I think, like, again, using the word showcase, because I think that's a good kind of, you know, way to describe putting brands at the forefront, but how you're going about attracting new business, getting return advertisers to really commit to, you know, campaigns this year, how you're really approaching selling so far this year.
So our strategy is really focused on three things: our talent, our franchises, and our tentpoles. South By being a tentpole, the talent being some of the examples that I mentioned on the pod, and franchises being predictable programming that is, whether it's weekly or monthly, in demand from audiences and highly sought after from an awareness perspective, from an engagement perspective. All the things that you would want from a franchise. And an example of that would be Eater at Home, which we actually just relaunched in partnership with Coca-Cola. All the same amazing content, but dialing up video, dialing up recipes, dialing up our newsletters, So I would say that is a great example of franchises. That focus on those three things allows for us to, I won't say insulate, because it's not, it's too strong of a word, but it allows for us to be as strategic as possible when we speak to partners. It allows for us to say, right now it's March, we want to speak to them 6 months out with what we're doing, and we want them to be able to help build with us and make their mark within our franchises, within our tentpoles, within our pods or whatever talent manifestations we have. So that focus allows for, to some extent, predictability, and it allows for our team to really know what to prioritize. As a portfolio house of brands, as a top 10 Comscore portfolio, it can be expansive, right? We have so many things. And so this allows for them to focus. One level down, we have industry vertical sales alignment, and they are focused on aligning with the endemic brands that match up with their verticals. So someone that is a food and beverage seller is going to be prioritizing Eater at Home as a franchise, and you'll see that manifest throughout the year. The tech and telco team would manifest the growth of, on the revenue side, of what we're doing on The Verge with AI. So it allows for focus and ultimately allows for our partners to benefit because there's clarity.
I think that's been an interesting trend I've picked up on too, is this kind of focus on niche to a degree and really kind of owning a specific content category in order to prove to advertisers that, you know, this is the area of expertise that they want to be activating in. And I feel like given the challenges with publishers competing for scale against, you know, Google and Facebook, like it in a lot of ways seems to be kind of like a losing battle. So this idea of like returning to niche to really focus on expertise, like having audiences that are very high intent within that category, seems to be a big priority in 2024, and just like really kind of hammering that home, which is, I think, an interesting and largely kind of like strength play for a lot of digital publishers. And so you mentioned, I think, with Eater, kind of like reinvesting in some of those like owned and operated, like either franchises or assets like newsletters and things like that. Like, how have you been looking at the brands that you have within your portfolio and really looking at kind of building into, again, expertise, audience development and things like that, considering referral sources like social have been troubled, Google search results have been, you know, messy and things like that. Like, how are you really investing in kind of that idea of being like categorical experts and being able to not only fulfill the advertiser side and like advertiser requests, but also just like making sure like these brands are in and of themselves very strong audience builders?
So the answer to that question is really simple. And it is essentially that we have not changed our strategy. A lot of credit should go to the way that our CEO, Jim Benkoff, has managed the business. He has consistently, since founding the company with SBN, SB Nation, that our core values are what does this brand represent and who does it reach and how do you maintain that relationship with authenticity? Certainly, as a advertising supported, and we have diversified lines of business, but as an advertising supported business, we have to be a strategic partner to our advertisers. But really, that authenticity, that what is trendy now as niche, in air quotes for those listening, is no different than our adherence to a quality editorial experience and a premium audience experience.
You also mentioned the timelines of being able to get advertisers to be thinking like 6 months out, which I feel like was a luxury lost the past few years, especially since COVID and how fast sales cycles have become. Are you finding that it's any easier now to be getting like to get advertisers to be thinking about Q3 or Q4 at this time of year, and what would get them on board with thinking that far out or committing that far out? Like in quarter deals and execution, I feel like have been the majority of ad sales for a lot of publishers the past couple of years. So how are you kind of thinking about sales cycles and advertiser demands and getting them to return to thinking a little bit longer term or bigger picture? Like, is it solely focused on kind of tent poles and franchises, or are you able to get other assets in that same longer tail mindset?
We're really pleased with our long-term relationships. Those relationships are made easier when we drive results. So we have, because we drive results pretty frequently, we have a strong number of those. When you think about the marketplace, I wouldn't say that it's deviated away from the in quarter. I would say it's more incumbent upon us to provide the value to signing on for something that's in Q3. And that is why we are so focused on talent, tentpoles, and franchises.
Is it someone coming in like in quarter, whether it's like an existing or new advertiser, and at that point, like your team is really working to upsell them into like a further down the line campaign, or how do you kind of approach that conversation? Like, is it after you have the results from, you know, an in-quarter performance, or like what's that kind of next steps to be getting them on board with later in the year activations?
So the way that that typically works is we will say in flight, this is what's working. Here's what we might recommend you optimize into, out of, invest more of your external budgets into if we are really driving high performance, and say, hey, with even more budget, we can do better. So that is the in-flight post. Our post-sale team does an amazing job of recapping not only how do the assets perform, but going back to, again, our first-party data platform, Forte, what audience segments worked really, really well. And while there are many first-party data platforms out there, Vox Media has long been committed to ad tech. And this is emblematic of starting Concert many, many years ago, launching Forte. And that gives us the ability to say, here's what segments are of the highest value. Here's what segments might have surprised you, and add a strategic lens to that campaign report. So we have in quarter, in during flight, we have that discussion. We have wrap report. Simultaneously, we are dreaming big with our CMO partners, with our agency partners, and saying, okay, we're not putting the cart before the horse, but we have trusted relationships with you, and we don't want you to miss this amazing opportunity, whether it's South By, whether it's Vulture Fest, whether it's Code, any of our high demand and, forgive the expression, low supply, because we're not commoditizing these amazing things, but anything that we know is going to drive tremendous interest, those partners are the ones that we want to go to first, because we value retention and we value those long-term relationships.
Definitely want to dive into kind of first-party data and the role that that's playing right now. But before that, one thing that had come up, and the story just came out, well, for the listeners, it would have come out a week ago, but it was, I was looking at a report at kind of like, I guess, ad volume or like a deal volume, and then also like client retention, and how in Q4 it was on the lower end, I would say, for publishers kind of holistically. It was around like 49%. And a few publishers I spoke with in Q1 have said that they've been trying to, or they've seen growth in ad revenue because of higher renewals for their advertisers. And so I'm curious how, I guess in this quarter, like what portion of your ad business has been coming from renewals versus new, knowing there's more upfront costs or like customer acquisition costs with generating like new business. So you mentioned like renewals is important. Is that ratio something that you're trying to increase, getting like the renewal rate higher this year? Or how are you thinking about balancing that with, you know, net new business?
Retention is always a focus for us. That is the foundation of predictability. The last couple of years for the industry have been unpredictable. So it's been harder to maintain that thread. Doesn't mean it's impossible. And from our lens, it's an incredibly important part of the business. Who are the partners that are coming back year in, year out? How are we building value? That is core to driving growth. Otherwise, you're just looking for new business constantly and it's too much churn. It's too much starting from square one. So we definitely have the benefit of having a strong retention rate, and it's something that we want to continue to grow. That focus on insights, that focus on value, and I'll give you an example of the value piece, is really core to how we go beyond just a click-through rate or whatever metric might be important. The insights piece is, as someone that is still under a year here at Vox Media, is incredibly impressive. We have most recently in the fall done AI roadshows for our partners built on two things. One, the expertise of The Verge. Two, the expertise of Edwin Wong and our insights team. Clients that are looking for a perspective from leading editorial brands and thought leaders want to sit down with us and hear from us on that. A couple of weeks ago, on that same insights track, we just released an anime study. And the value that we're seeing is really us as a navigational buddy, if you will, to brands to say, help me understand this. Help me unpack this. So it's not just about the results. It's also about the insights.
Yeah, that's definitely it. So getting into kind of like first party data and understanding like your audience in depthly, and then also adding the insights piece into it. It's something I've been working on from like a trend reporting point of view, but also a curiosity of mine, given the start of cookie deprecation, like if there has been a change in, I guess like advertiser, not demand, but like what they need to kind of understand how a campaign is performing, or like what information they need to kind of commit to working with digital publishers right now. If it's changed beyond metrics like, you know, viewability and click-through rate and those kind of, you know, empty calorie KPIs to be more in depth on who the audience is, what their intentions are, how things like tracking intent, you know, from story to, you know, maybe cart in some cases, factors into that decision. And so getting into like the insights piece, I am curious, you mentioned AI and anime as two of the topics. Like, is there a strategy for, you know, presenting insights as kind of like a door opener to get like either new clients in or even like renewal clients, just to, so that they have a better understanding of, you know, these factors? Is this something that's being asked a lot more of you by advertisers because of like cookie deprecation? Because I feel like it's something I've heard from just so many publishers lately, is just investing in research, investing in insights to make sure that they know who their audience is in a way that's unique and differentiated from their competitors.
Sure. So we know that intent signals are important, and we have an abundance of intent signals through brands like Eater as the preeminent where do I go out to eat, or with Eater at Home, what should I make? We have intent signals from Thrillist. I have 24 hours in city X, Y, and Z. Where do I go? Tell me about stargazing. We have intent signals from The Strategist as the preeminent guide to buying everything. But beyond that, we can also say, this audience spent X number of minutes and has an average HHI of 200K plus. So the blend of those two things provides tremendous value depending on who we're talking to and the right insight. Outside of all of that, we're also leading with insights that may not be at the forefront. For example, Eater is the most affluent within the food category, and that can come as a surprise to some of our customers, but once they hear it, it opens up a new way of thinking. So the more traditional insights a la Eater, as well as the more bespoke insights from Forte that are built on the strong intent signals that we have, really fuel those conversations.
And have you been like maybe training your sales team to incorporate more of these insights from your like either first party data team or like, you know, insights kind of in general to be using them again, kind of as like introductory openers or just like more robust kind of pitches in a way? Cause that's another trend I've heard is like training sales teams on these insights so that they present as even more knowledgeable of a category and they're, you know, already answering the questions that they know advertisers are curious about within a certain industry.
Our goal for sellers is to be expert level in the endemic categories that they align with from a vertical perspective. So from that lens, they need to be versed across our first party data offering, across insights, across our talent, tentpoles and franchises. That's a baseline expectation. It's always a journey. So by no means has it been a, yes, we arrived. We now know it all. You never know it all. Things are changing constantly. But we present ourselves in a way that is designed to drive long-term value to our customers.
Within like insights as a, you know, either division or part of the, you know, I guess, overall kind of data offering that you have, I'm curious if you've been investing in how that team is, you know, growing this year, given that there is, I think, generally on the advertiser side, a lot of interest in knowing, again, like not just intent, but like who these audiences are very like in-depthly. So I guess, have you been investing in like either growing that team or you mentioned again, like AI and anime as two kind of subject matter focuses, but like your plans for 2024 and what that team's really focusing on, how are you thinking about like insights as an offering and investing in that as like a, you know, go-to-market strategy or just like a, you know, offering to give advertisers a little bit more of a leg up in, you know, who your audience is, what their intentions are, and things of that nature.
Insights is a core part of the go-to-market. We lead with insights. That opens the door to creative conversations. That opens the door to more performant campaigns. From that lens, it will continue to grow in importance, and the demand, we believe, will continue to grow from clients to hear from us. So the road shows that we go on, that will continue. We're on 2.0 of the AI road show. Obviously, AI is moving at the speed of light, and so it's not a checkbox, as we talked about with anime. And from that lens, the demand isn't just from our partners. We actually saw incredible interest from the preeminent over-the-top platform in Crunchyroll saying, this is amazing. We obviously agree with you. But yes, And thank you for taking the lead on this incredibly important topic. Folks like to align with generational monikers and leave it at that. And our insights team is really looking for novel insights, for novel consumption changes, and bringing that to market. So it is a differentiator alongside of how resonant our brands are and the influence of our talent.
I think we've spoken about the roadshow separately outside of this conversation, but for those who, like the listeners who are, you know, unfamiliar with that concept, like, could you just give a little bit of an overview of how you've been approaching that strategy and maybe with regards to either AI or anime?
Absolutely. Our amazing insights team will work with our editorial leaders to identify those changing trends and build a presentation that is meant to unpack it. What's unique is it's unpacking it through not only the insights lens and analyzing audience behaviors, analyzing the marketplace, making predictions, but also it's stamped with editorial curation. It's saying, yes, I validate these. No, I don't validate these. So it's really trend casting at a level that you don't see elsewhere.
Are these presentations happening like at industry events like South By, or are you like trying to do like desk side presentations too with certain clients?
It's all of the above. We did a number of AI roadshow meetings at CES, which was apropos. We have done bespoke presentations all over the country. We've done the virtual presentations. So I would say it depends on what is most convenient for our clients. Our Insights newsletter also is a great way for our clients to be able to understand key data points and get a little bit of a snippet versus the full roadshow. But it really is both where they are at their HQ as well as where we collectively are at industry events.
We're nearing the end of our conversation. And so I guess my last question for you is, as mentioned earlier, we're at the tail end of Q1, which again is kind of hard to believe. But based on this quarter's performance and how you have been able to kind of get advertisers back in the mindset of talking, you know, 6 months down the line versus just in quarter to a degree, how are you feeling about the rest of the year ad market wise? And do you think that ultimately 2024 will be a growth year for digital advertising or maybe within like certain aspects of advertising? But yeah, how are you feeling about 2024 so far?
So after a really turbulent period, I can say that our business is stable. We're seeing some real bright spots and we like how things are taking shape. We're certainly not taking anything for granted. We know that this can change on a dime. The one thing that gives us, as I would say, always on confidence is that we have been consistently focused on building quality brands and reaching engaged audiences. That gives us the ability to drive meaningful results for our partners. And if we're driving meaningful results, then that opens the door to at least some level strategic thinking 6 months out, at least some level upfront conversations that may not be pervasive across the entire marketplace, but are unique to us.
All right. So I think that term cautious optimism still kind of persists at this point in the year based on conversations I've had. But yeah, that's really fascinating that there is this kind of return to a little bit of more upfront dialogues versus sticking really in quarter. So we'll see how it continues on. But thank you so much, Jeff, for joining me on the podcast again. It's great to chat with you and hear how South by Southwest is. I also appreciate you jumping on a podcast, you know, just a day after returning from that mayhem. So appreciate that.
No, thank you so much, Kaylee, as always. No mayhem, coming back recharged. It was amazing. And I always will make time. So thank you again.
Thanks again for tuning into the Digiday podcast. For more coverage of the media and marketing industries, check out digiday.com. If you're not already a member of Digiday Plus, be sure to subscribe to get exclusive content, research, guides, and more. Digiday Plus members also get access to weekly briefings from the Digiday edit team, including our newest newsletter, The Media Briefing. And as always, please rate, review, and subscribe to the Digiday podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Talk to you next week.